Welcome to All Learning Reimagined, the podcast that defines convention and redefines the purpose and practice of education. Here we venture beyond institutional boundaries. Whether you're a parent, educator, or curious mind devoted to lifelong growth, this is your space to challenge assumptions and co-create a more humane and intuitive approach to education. Let's reimagine what education can be.
G'day, welcome to All Learning Reimagined. I'm your host, Teresa, bringing you a little ray of sunshine, as together we're reimagining the future of education, one inspired story at a time. Oh my goodness gracious me, we have been cruising along for months now, and I just want to give a big shout out to all of the people who've been contacting me and giving me lots of feedback and comments, particularly around the resources and the articles. I'm so thrilled that they are useful and that lots of people are getting to share them and adapt them and adopt them in real life circumstances. So it just makes my heart sing, of course. Thank you so much for the feedback. Today, everybody, our topic is actually about embodying listening. And this came across my heart, because I've been stopping lately and just observing. I've sort of been looking around, slowing down, because slower is faster in today's society, and just observing how people are just not seeming to listen anymore. And I felt like this would be a really interesting topic to dive into, because I'm certainly guilty of it at the same time. But I actually want to talk about layers of listening. So I'm not just talking about when you have a conversation with another person and listening to respond, or listening when you are connecting with another person. It's also listening to yourself, your inner voice, your greater being who is constantly speaking and communicating with us. Of course, it doesn't speak in words, though. We have to be aware and look for the signs. And then, of course, nature. You know, nature, Mother Nature, Sophia, is around us everywhere, and she's constantly communicating, as are the animals and our pets. Just life is communicating with us. But are we actually listening, or are we living life by default and just cruising along? And what I've observed when I've actually took a step back is there are a lot of people saying a lot of things, blah, 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 me included, but I don't know if we're actually really thinking before we speak, because I don't know if we're actually really listening and checking for deep understanding before we respond and participate in these conversations. So there's so many different layers that I'd really like to dig into. So let's get started. So the first thing I'd like to talk about is facts about deep listening. I think we probably need to go back to the research. So usually when you say listen, most people think about hearing, because hearing is the obvious thing. Obviously, you've got ears, and that's what we listen with, or do we? Because scientists estimate that verbal language is only about 7 to 10% of any meaning during a message. And then you have tone. So the tone of voice is about 30 to 38% of the way something's saying, of how we actually hear when we are listening. And then, of course, body language. To get a message across, body language is also about 50 to 60% of the message that's being portrayed. So it's not just what you're saying it, it's how you're saying it, and then, of course, how you're expressing it through your body language, your facial expressions, all of those different things. Remembering that our entire body is like a gigantic antenna. When we put our thoughts out, it's radiating out, it seems invisible, but people are picking up and sensing our thoughts and our moods and our emotions, whether we're aware of it or not. And that huge antenna certainly goes out when we are communicating. The question is, when people are communicating to us, are we stopping and taking note, and are we listening? So deep listening to accounts for all of these things, not just the words that that person is saying. And There are a lot of people that naturally do this, particularly empaths and people who can tap into emotions and people who are really aware of themselves and are intuitive. However, in today's society, not everyone has had the opportunity to even consider this, depending on your upbringing and your social programming, really, when it comes down to it, when you think about it. Now, the brain processes nonverbal cues faster than speech. And this is something that I really like to talk to my students about, the fact that the nonverbal cues speak 1,000 words before someone even opens their mouth. They just have to walk into the room and you can usually pick up the mood, the emotion. They don't even have to say anything. Often just a look is all you need in order to be able to communicate if you're aware and you're listening in that space. But the interesting fact is, our nervous system picks up on micro expressions, our posture shifts and our emotional energy before the words even land. It is just, it's that fast, it's that instant. And I think this is really fascinating because that's why sometimes something feels off. Even when someone's saying the words, if it still feels off, there's a mismatch there. And so, when that's the case, if that ever happens to me, I don't listen to the words that's being said. I always listen to my body's responses, particularly with the whole stranger danger thing. If you're in a situation and your little spidey senses go up, the hackles go back up on the side of your neck, or your body's just feeling like something's not right here, that's the time to stop, slow down, listen deeper before you take action so you can really have that awareness. And I really feel like this is a good conversation to have with children of all ages, not just adults, basically. So I mentioned the nervous system before, and when someone listens with empathy, eye contact and stillness and a really soft tone, it usually signals to the other person's ventral vagal system, and that increases their sense of like safety and trust, I'd probably say, because their stress hormones drop. And the prefrontal cortex, which is the part where we're doing most of our logical thinking, usually comes more active because it allows for clearer thinking. Now, this, neuroscientists tell us that's because we're not in fight or flight. So the reptilian part of our brain, and the amygdala is not kicking in with those emotions. If we're not fight or flight, and we're in calm space, and our nervous system is really calm, then that allows us to open up for deeper listening, which in turn becomes deeper learning if it's in a learning situation. And I would have to say personally that I feel like listening can really change the listener. Studies also show that mirroring neurons activate when we really deeply listen and attend to others. It's such an important skill, and I really feel like it's a skill that we're losing in certain cultures. I can't say that as a blanket across mankind, but it's certainly something that I feel in the Western society we're losing this skill. So most people don't realize that when you are really actively, deeply listening to someone, particularly, if you're with a partner and you're really connecting, what's happening is your bodies are physically synchronizing, your breathing pace, your heart rhythm, all your emotional signals can actually align. And I know, speaking as a mother, this is certainly something that you can experience with your child when they're very small. There's nothing more precious than something like this. When you're giving them your full attention and your full heart, and you're really tuning in to what they're communicating with you, your baby or your child, even if they don't have the words, you can still have that communication. And I do also feel like there's a lot of adults that I know that have pets that are exactly the same. They seem to know exactly what that pet or that animal or that creature knows and feels because of that resonance and that mirroring of the neurons. It's just fascinating stuff. I mean, are you fascinated? Because I'm fascinated. I'm thinking this is just amazing. Our bodies are magnificent. They're just, it's friggin' magnificent. So after all of this, then I actually stopped because usually when I'm choosing a topic for each week, I have to sit with it for a little while and feel if it resonates. Is the timing right? Is it something that needs to be shared now? And I actually sit and stop and listen to myself and observe things that are around me. And what came up for me, which is really hilarious because I'm the sort of person that loves to talk. You've probably noticed I like to rabbit on. And sometimes I don't even draw a breath, especially when I'm excited. I'm like a little puppy dog. I just blah, 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 and just talk and talk and talk. But the deepest listening for me happens when I am silent. So when I slow down, usually I'm sitting outside in nature. Sometimes it might be in the shower or in the car or walking on the beach or just when I have that alone time and there's just silence. And that to me is, it's really like a pause which offers space for that deeper truth to surface, because that's when I get my deepest aha moments, and I really have to feel and just listen. I don't even need to do anything. You just literally just be. And when you have that silence, it's really, in my opinion, a crucial part of listening. And I know many Indigenous cultures describe silence as a part of the conversation. You know, it's not the absence of a conversation, it's part of the conversation. And some of my favorite people on this planet are people that I can sit and not say a word, and I'm really comfortable in silence just sitting with them. We can communicate and we can just be. You don't need to actually have words. And this is something that I really feel, particularly in today's busy schools, certainly the ones in Australia, and the ones that I know that I worked in London, busy, 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 go, go, go. Where is the spaced learning? Where is the downtime? Because even during break time, children have a lot of scheduled things you need to do here, go there, and there's very little time for just silence, to our detriment, I believe, because that's why we have a lot of cognitive overload, because we've just cramming so much into our brains and into our lives, and our bodies and our adrenals that just go into overdrive. So when it comes to deep listening, it's not just hearing, it's looking at also non-verbal cues, it's tapping in and observing our nervous system and aligning our nervous system to the person that we're communicating with if we want deep listening, and then also considering silence, sort of rounding up what I've mentioned so far today. Because deep listening, when I experience this, and it might be different for you, all I can do is simply share my perspective. I can't tell you what and how. I'm literally just sharing perspectives with you, and it'll either resonate with you or it does not, because we all have different ways of experiencing perception. And really, sensory is our senses is actually part of deep listening, because some people are visual. I'm very visual. So body language, eye movement, facial expression is really important to me when I'm communicating. And tone, however, for auditory listeners and people who have preference in learning through auditory ways as well, it's the tone and the cadence and the what's said, and the how it's being said might be what's the perception that they're really tuning into and that they're leaning into to get their information. And that really reminds me of that the quote of people don't always remember what you say, but they remember how you make them feel, certainly fits into this area of that listening is, at the same time. So feeling your own body cues, your intuition, your emotional shifts. You know, I'm observing how am I feeling in this conversation? How is the other person feeling? Are we communicating? Is this a two-way? Is it an equal conversation? And if it's not, is that okay? Is the other person that's doing less talking, are they comfortable with that? Or is one person dominating? Like there's just so many different things that could be running through your brain at the time. And you might not even realize that your brain is having this conversation all whirring in the background, like a background program that seems to be happening in your subconscious. There's just so many layers to listening. One that I've become aware of probably in the last 10 years, you know, I'm getting a little bit older now, so starting to notice it, and that's more energy sensing. So attunement to subtle signals, presence, tension. I feel like we do it innately, and certainly as a child, you do it innately. But it, within my career, certainly working in my space, working with adults, if I'm coaching and I'm mentoring, if I'm public speaking or I'm running workshops, it's certainly looking and feeling the energy and sensing the energy in the room. I'm consciously aware of that because it's a definite part of communication, and it's something that I do stop and tap into to listen. Where are we at with this? So you can read the room, and read the conversation and adjust accordingly. And also check for understanding, depending on what the conversation might be. And of course, context is important. So context awareness, what environment are you in? If I'm out having a barbecue in the backyard with a lot of mates and there's a little bit of alcohol involved, my conversation is going to be very different than if I'm in a formal setting. So not only the lexicon and the words that I'm using, but the relationships that you have, and the lived experience that you have with people, and the deeper the relationships. Personally, relationships is the number one thing that any of us ever, ever, ever have to worry about. It underpins everything. Relationships with self, relationships with nature, the universe, the cosmos, relationships with other people, the environment, the plants, the animals, everything is a relationship. Relationship with the seasons, it's just everywhere. And today, a lot of people would say relationship with their AI. Well, I don't even think we can say artificial intelligence, the technological intelligence. A lot of people are considering that relationship space that they have in that space as well with technology. There's so many different lenses and layers when it comes to all of this sort of stuff. And attention really is fairly finite. Interesting fact that was told to me a couple of days ago was that in today's society, and I have no idea where this fact came from, so I can't back it up, but it was an interesting fact that was shared with me. And that was that the average human today has a attention span of about 8 seconds. 8 seconds to grab their attention, because of all of the clickbait, when people are constantly looking at different things, and they have to consciously make an effort after 8 seconds if they want to keep focusing and listening. Now, if that's actually true, then that is really scary because that's, surely that's goldfish level, really. Oh, look, a rock swimming around again. Oh, look, a rock. So 8 seconds, come on. I have to dig in and do a little bit of research about that. But that, if it is true, or even if it's not even 8 seconds, even if it's 20 seconds, it's something that we have to stop and think about when we are having that communication and are we listening? Yeah, it's amazing. So putting on my teacher's hat now, my educator's hat, my coach, my mentor hat, it, in my opinion, listening has always been a learned skill. It is something that I have explicitly taught and modeled through the years, at all ages, down to young early childhood stages. It's teaching them what does a listener look like, feel like, sit like, what do you do, even with your body language. So having those conversations and that modeling during that play space, and then of course to more formal conversations and practicing around learned listening. So I'm going to share an example of an activity that I've done with adults. Certainly when I've led big teams of adults in my employee, in my leadership positions, you can use this activity with perhaps like a professional reading or an article or even a short film clip. So you watch it and then you do this activity, which is called the final word protocol. It's not mine. But I'll share it because it's a really good activity. I have done this with children as young as primary school. It's not quite as effective, and I do adjust it according to the age groups. So what happens is, usually I have a group of three people. You can have more, but three seems to be, the magic number, rule of three, of course. So you either watch the clip or you read the article or you look at the image or the card, whatever the stimulus happens to be, or you might give a question, just an interesting, deep, open-ended question. So whatever the stimulus is, they have a look at it. Everyone decides what order they're going to speak. Number one, number two, number three. The first speaker speaks for 1 minute. And yes, I usually have some sort of timer and some sort of way to indicate that the time is up. So the first person talks for 1 minute on whatever the topic is or whatever it is that comes up for them, if it's a professional reading. What was it that they got out of it? And they have 1 minute completely to share their perspective. And the other two people are not allowed to talk. They are not allowed to can sit there and think about, oh, what am I going to say? What am I going to say? Because that is human nature. We are conditioned to do that. They have to actually sit and actively listen to what that person is saying. And it is harder than it think than you think. Particularly for teenagers, they really struggle with this at first, until they get the hang of it, and then it really becomes second nature for them. When the time is up, then the next number two person speaks, and it's their opportunity to talk, and they have to add value to the conversation that's already been shared. So that's really showing that they're respecting the first person that spoke. They're taking on board the opinions of the person that spoke. They might agree to disagree, they might add their perspective in their conversation. They could possibly take it off onto an extra tangent or add another question if they want to, but they're pretty much just adding to the conversation. And then when that 1 minute is up, because no one else is allowed to talk, then the third person gets to talk. And once again, they're sharing and adding their perspective, their opinion, what they feel in part of this conversation, whatever it is that the stimulus is that they're talking about. But wait, there's more. Because once everybody's had a turn, then we go back, and the number one person then has to sum up the conversation that everybody has had. So the number one person then has 1 minute to basically round up, and sum up what everybody feels, whether it's an agreement or this is what we came, these are the main points. And that summarizing is actually a really good skill at the same time. So that means that the number one person still has a purpose to actively listen. Now, this final word protocol is probably hands down the number one activity I've done across the board to get that deep listening in a learning environment. It's so effective. Highly recommend that you have a go. You could even do this around the dinner table in a really informal setting. Just get different people to have a conversation. But for young children or and for young teenagers, they actually find it quite fun because they like to get to have that uninterrupted speaking. The introverts get to have a chance to say. Usually they don't become number one person. They want that time to think and process. The extrovert usually is the one person who says that they want to go first, but they do get a chance to speak in that 1 minute without being interrupted. Now, if they choose to use part of that in silence, that's completely their prerogative. It's their opportunity and it's their 1 minute to share what it is that they want to share, however they choose to share it. It's very valuable. Cannot speak highly enough of this. And it's an activity that I've done many times when I need students to work in groups and teams. For example, over the years, I've had groups of students in primary school running businesses. So they'd have to design a business in a team. For example, we did running a restaurant once. So they had to design their menus and their layout. They had to apply for the jobs of what they wanted to do in the restaurant. They had to resolve their own conflicts if there were any conflicts in the group. So they had talking circles where they had to sit and they had to listen. They had to source food. They had to budget. They had to cook. They had to write invitations for parents or whoever it was that was going to come along to the restaurant. So there were so many different layers in a massive project. But the final word protocol was an opportunity for them to get that deep listening skill in amongst all of this, because whatever the stimulus is that they're discussing can deepen their understanding when they're making their decision making. So you can literally take this activity and pick it up and put it in any context, and it will work. And professional reading for adults, it's very effective at the same time. So I really just wanted to share that because I've had so much value from this deep listening activity over the years, of course. It's been fantastic. So the article that I have written this week is a little bit about listening, but attached to the article will be a list of different activities that you can use. And I've got some for young children, things like a sound hunt where they walk quietly outdoors, they close their eyes, and then they have to name five sounds that they can hear near them, and then five sounds that they can hear far away from them. So they're really concentrating and listening on the senses around them. Which sounds were the softest, which sounds were the loudest, were there any sounds that sounded like something was moving or alive? And it really builds in that sensory awareness and also patience, because they have to sit for a certain amount of time and they have to be patient. They have to really be still and be present. And it's such a valuable activity. I love doing it. I usually do it with the younger children. It's quite fun. The mirror me activity is a really good one, where they pair up. One student sort of does slow gestures and the other student sitting opposite them sort of mirrors the other gestures. And it's really quite good for listening to someone else's body cues. You're following their body cues, and often their facial expression gives away with whatever their actions happens to be. And the children tune into their up to themselves. I notice their breathing seems to regulate, their nervous system seem to regulate, and it is really a lovely activity. It seems so simple, but it's actually very powerful when it comes to deep listening, particularly with the body and with the senses at the same time. One of the activities that I have in my article this week, which I'm publishing today, of course, is putting your hand on a tree. Now, trees are one of my favorite things. Obviously, my first name is Teresa, so people call me Teresa all the time instead of Teresa, but it's all good. But when you place your hand on a tree, or one of my favorite things to do is to sit on the ground with my back to a tree, particularly if I'm stressed. If the world is just too overwhelming, or I'm not feeling 100%, I get bare feet outside, sit with my back to a tree, or I just literally put my palms to the tree, and then you stop and you just stop and listen. And it's great. Not only is it great healing and energy, but it's amazing how this tree will communicate with you. And sometimes when you ask the children, what story do you think this tree is telling? Oh my giddy aunt, honestly, some of the things in their imagination just come alive. It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful to listen to and watch, particularly the children who are usually addicted to technology. Getting them outside, getting them attached to a tree. A leaf just fell down and landed on your head. What's that leaf telling you? Was that a message for you? What do you think it could mean? So, and they can imagineer it, even if they don't know how to. It's getting them out of their head and into that imagining, and being able to stop and take note of the fact that nature is constantly communicating with us, and tapping into that self at the same time. Another activity that I have, which is very useful, is when you have a short story or possibly just a picture or an image, and you ask them, what is not being said? So, what's the missing voice here? So, what's not being said? And in my opinion, this is a really good starting point when if you're looking at bias, at cognitive bias, or you're looking at propaganda, because you can actually look at a story and go, okay, whose voice is missing here, or what is not being said? And there's so many different layers to this, but it's a true life skill that we actually need in real life, and it does link very deeply to listening. It really does. It's just amazing. Okay, so I do have other activities which I have in the article, like listening circles. I know we've heard for years that you can have talking sticks, and everybody has a turn when they talk, and they hold the sticks around, and things like that. There's so many different things that you can use. And I've got reflection questions for adults and educators to really help. So when a child speaks, am I listening to understand what the child is communicating, or am I listening because I'm trying to solve their problem for them? Which is usually what we do as, martyr archetypes. We want to go in and try and save the children all of the time, but sometimes they just need us to just listen to understand what they're communicating. They don't need us to solve the problem for them. So having those self-awareness as an adult or as an educator is also a really deep skill. So I've got a series of questions for adults and educators. Some are relational, some are cultural. And then I've got actionable questions as well, which will help. And then I've also created a deep listening checklist, which is really useful. So if you're a homeschooler or a parent or an educator, or even a student that wants to take control of your own conversation, then that checklist can be really useful at the same time. And I think that's probably about it for this week, because we've just about run out of time. I can talk about listening forever. It's such a great subject, and I love it. Love, love, love. It's just fantastic. So if you are interested in finding out more, you can go to bbsradio.com/all learning reimagined. And that will take you to my landing page. And then that's where you'll find all of the archive shows and every week when I publish an article or resources that you can use for free. Just take them, share them, adapt them, do what you like with them. I really don't mind. Just use them, please. That's why I create them, because it gives me joy. So the article that we'll have today will be there. And definitely enjoy them if you want to scroll through and check it out. And so, other than that, thanks for joining me, everybody, on All Learning Reimagined. And until next week, go out and explore, experience, express, listen, of course. Go out and live learning. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you for joining us on All Learning Reimagined, where passion illuminates the path forward. Remember this: the future of learning doesn't arrive from above, it begins within. You are the spark, the shift, the living answer to education's silent call for transformation. So stay curious, stay awake. Let inspiration be your compass, because how we learn today is not just personal, it is profoundly generative. It shapes the very architecture of tomorrow's world. We are not separate from the system, we are its evolution. Until next time, trust the wisdom of your own unfolding and let your life be the lessons that light the way for others.